Each year, or the Sangha leaders are asked to do a talk. This is something I usually approach with great trepidation. And this year I decided I would try and be proactive. And so I actually stepped forward and said I would like to do a talk. And I chose this date because it's actually one day after what would have been my mother's 98th birthday. And she died this past winter. And also, I understand that today is quite an auspicious day because we're having the full moon ceremony. And also in the Theravadin tradition, on Tuesday is Vesak, which is thought to be the Buddha's birthday, day of enlightenment, and the day that he died. They celebrate all of them at the same time, 2,600 years ago. So the timing is good. When I decided to step forward and do this talk, I also had a very strong intuitive thought or word that came to mind. And the word was confidence. And I thought, well, that's a little hard to understand why I would choose that for a Dharma talk, because it's not something I usually associate with our practice. And it's also something that's personally very challenging. But as I am trying to trust my intuition more, I decided, well, I'll go forward with that and I will try and see where that leads me. So confidence is what I'm going to be talking about. I'm not going to take my glasses off. I want you all to sort of begin by just closing your eyes for a minute. And if you can, take yourself back to the earliest part of your life when you were first learning to walk. And try and remember, what was it that propelled you to leave the safety of the ground and begin the exploration in a vertical position of the universe? Now I want you to take yourself maybe into the middle of your life. Think about a situation that was very challenging and you met it, maybe with success or maybe not with success. What did confidence look like in that situation? And now I want you to take yourself forward to maybe right now, maybe the end of your days, maybe a time where you really have come to a sort of impasse where you didn't feel that your abilities were going to take you further along your spiritual path or further into what you need to do in life. To what did you turn to for confidence there? Okay, coming back to the present moment. Confidence, the term confidence actually comes from the Latin root, which means con, which is with, and fidere, which means trust. So confidence actually means to be with trust. Also, confidence in the dictionary has a sort of almost secret or hidden quality to it, the confidant. It's about trusting in either trusting in another with some private information that you don't want the rest of the world, or that sort of finding a sort of place of vulnerability where you're willing to share that vulnerability. The development of confidence. I believe, so I started with the child that is starting to walk. I believe that confidence is something that all beings are innately have, confidence, the drive towards independence, towards self-sufficiency. A young child, a toddler, isn't taught how to walk. There is no particular reason why they should leave the security of the ground in order to propel themselves forward, but they do. And the reason I believe that they do this is because of this sort of innate confidence that is part of our beings. And it's driven by a sort of joy and wonder in the world. That I was recently visiting with my grandchild, who they live in England, and she's just under 2 years old. And to see the sort of confidence she has really is envious. She goes down the streets, sort of blowing kisses to people. And of course they respond with smiles and great encouragement. That sense of the world is there and I can trust it, I can trust in the people around me. She has fortunate circumstances. I think confidence flourishes in a atmosphere of love. I was thinking that about this group, actually. I was thinking about how I could take confidence because there are so many people that I love in this group. Around about 2 years of age, a child really starts to understand that they are separate in this world, that they are their sense of themselves being a separate being is starting to come to the forefront. And with that, confidence starts to take a slightly different turn. That confidence at that point has to do, it's what I call learned confidence. It's how you are in the world. And it often has to do with how you feel yourself in comparison to others. Self-confidence and quite honestly, the innate sense of confidence, I think, takes a real blow at this point. A young child, if you ask a young child to dance or to draw or to do something creative, they all believe that they can do that. If you ask an adult whether, you know, can you sing, can you dance, and then go, oh, no, I can't sing. You don't want to hear me sing, or no, I've got two left feet, you know, I can't dance. But of course, we all innately can do these things. What we mean is that in comparison to others, we don't feel that we can do it as well. So this learned confidence, we're comparing ourselves with others within the pecking order of society. Our confidence begins to fail, and it. If you go to the bookstore and you look at the self-help books, most of them you will find are really about how to build your sense of confidence and how to believe in yourself. Because confidence in our society is often associated with successful outcomes, we often end up learning a sort of a sense of lack, that we aren't somehow making the grade. I read a book by Gloria Steinem in which she was talking about self-esteem, and it was called Revolution from Within, and she said that studies showed that as you went up the sort of academic ladder, self-esteem actually went down. And that's because it was the hierarchical situation in which the pyramid, there's only a few that can be at the top of the pyramid. If confidence is built by a process of engaging, of trying, even when the likely outcome isn't going to give you a gold medal, it's only going to give you a sense of having really tried, then we start to build a sort of reliant self-confidence. And I think this often is sort of the basis of a feeling of integrity. I can trust myself. I can trust myself that whatever the situation is, I will do my best. I will try my hardest. And that you can depend on more than you can depend on success. I think it's interesting. I don't want to turn this political at all, but it's really interesting to look at the President of the United States, who is, by all definitions, a winner in our society. And yet, his constant need for affirmation shows actually a real low sense of self-esteem. So this is one of the problems with even success won't necessarily give you that feeling that you can really rely and depend on yourself. So the third part of confidence, which is where we really get to the Buddha stuff, is what I call transcendent or non-self-confidence. This is the confidence that goes beyond our individual abilities and capacity and relates to the larger dimension of our lives. We might refer to it as our universal self. What does confidence mean in a spiritual practice? With Buddhism, there is understanding that there are two realities. And one is the reality, is the relative reality, and that's the reality of form. That's our body, how we feel things, how we sense things. And that's where we live most of the time. But there is also the absolute reality. And the absolute reality is that which transcends this body of form, transcends this sense of a very separate self living in a period of time that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, we're born and we die. And the universal self is one in which there is unity and there is oneness in all. This sense of confidence that we often need to fuel and to propel our spiritual practice has to do with relating to this absolute sense, having some faith that absolute reality is really tangible, is really something that we can experience, we can realize. It's our Buddha nature. It's not to say that one is better than the other. They are it's a co-creative process from the Heart Sutra. that emptiness and form are not different from each other. They are. It's I often like to think of it sort of like a cup. If you take a cup can only exist if there's space around it. So the cup is like our form, but the space is more like our absolute nature. But they have this co-creation that our absolute, the absolute reality is lived through our basic relative. So the absolute dimension fulfills this larger sense, but it's not accessible through our normal channels of sensation. It isn't something that can be perceived. It does not have form in that way. It is said that a firm intention, commitment, and practice, everyone has the ability to experience our absolute natures. But I often have this image, especially like in a meditation retreat where I'm feeling like I am lost, I'm confused, that I'm expected to sort of pull myself up by my socks and then keep pulling myself up until I actually levitate. And it's a sort of something I don't know how to do. How do you move from what I know, what is familiar and what is sort of certain, to this other dimension that doesn't follow the same rules? In Pali, there's a word shadra, or trusting in the teachings. This is trusting in the teachings. It's because Buddhism is a non-theistic tradition. There is not a God that we can sort of turn to, that we can rely on, that we can, when we're feeling lost, we can have a belief that this will save us. What we have is our own innate nature, and we have the teachings that have come to us through thousands of years of people that have engaged in this path and have come to realizations. So shadra doesn't mean blind faith, but a willingness to accept or trust teachings that we do not at this point personally experience or realize. The Buddha taught us not to accept any teachings, including his, without testing them and examining them for ourselves. He taught that the world that we perceive is largely illusory, and our sense of being a finite, separate self, locked in time, being the source of our ignorance and suffering. But the fact is, I feel pretty real. I want to read to you a section from Zen My Beginner Mind, Suzuki Roshi, and it's called Believing in Nothing. I discovered that it is necessary, absolutely necessary, to believe in nothing. That is, we have to believe in something which has no form and no color, something that exists before all forms and color appeared. This is very important. No matter what God or doctrine you believe in, if you become attached to it, your belief will be based more or less on a self-centered idea. You strive for perfect faith in order to save yourself, but it will take time to attain such a perfect faith. You will be involved in an absolute involved in an idealistic practice. In constantly seeking to actualize your ideal, you will have no time for composure. If you understand yourself as the temporal embodiment of the truth, I love that phrase, the temporal embodiment of the truth, you will have no difficulty whatsoever. You will have no difficulty whatsoever. You will appreciate your surroundings and you will appreciate yourself as a wonderful part of Buddha's activity, even in the midst of difficulty. This is our way of life. Another passage I read in this book. Actually, I think I'll get to that when I get to patience. There's a Zen proverb that says, a student must have great faith, great doubt, and great determination. I actually felt really relieved when I read this because I had never thought of doubt as an attribute that was really important. But when you think about it, if you have faith that is not questioned, is not examined, then you have a belief, but the belief is something external to yourself. The doubt is the process of actually examining. And great determination, because this takes time. So faith and doubt are complementary energies. Faith affirms and doubt investigates. It's about letting go of the need for certainty and remaining open to not knowing. Having the courage to step outside your habitual patterns, your preconceived notions of yourself. It's about being open-hearted. The Buddhist path really requires a lot of confidence in ourselves. I read somewhere, and I couldn't find it, but that the Buddha, when asked, said that there was no other person that he was more fond of, I believe, than himself. Do you recognize that?
No, he's telling people there is no one you should love more than yourself. You should care for yourself equally with others.
And sort of back to the child and the innate sense of confidence, a child can take risks because they have a belief in themselves. So having a belief in yourself is actually really important on a spiritual path, because it's actually what enables you to go a bit beyond your normal idea of who you are. Patience. A sense of patience enables you to find, a sense of confidence, enables you to find the patience to wait for the moments of insight, the courage to look clearly at your delusions, and the equanimity to be with things just as they are. There was another passage in the book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, in which he was talking about the four horses. I don't know whether any of you are familiar with this. But the first horse is the horse that performs very well, is young and agile, and goes forward with hardly any sense of direction. And only the shadow of the whip is enough to get this horse on course. And then the second horse is a horse that is equally very good, very fast runner, very good at following directions, but needs a little bit more encouragement. And so it has to actually see the whip. And the third horse is the horse that will do well, but he needs lots of it needs lots of direction. And so it actually has to feel the whip. And the fourth horse will not run unless it actually feels the pain in its marrow. And Suzuki Roshi went on to say that it's actually, all of us would like to be the first horse, you know. Let's face it, we'd all like to be able to do what we want in a very speedy fashion. You know, we'd all like to come to enlightenment completely in this moment. But it's actually the fourth horse that is the one that learns the lessons most deeply, because it actually has to penetrate right through to the marrow before it really understands. And that was another thing I found encouraging, you know. A quote from Shantideva in The Way of the Bodhisattva, let us not crave in anxious fear to be saved, but for the patience to win our freedom. You know, I'm 69 years old. I just had my birthday. And I often will think, okay, you know, I've been at this a long time. And the feeling of sort of time running out. And then I was remembering, I think, Michael, you gave a talk on the koan about how there is a monk that's holding on to a branch by his teeth, and he's over some sort of a precipice that if he lets go of the branch, he'll fall and die. And these people come along and they want him to give a teaching, and he's caught in this dilemma of holding on. Does he let go of the branch? Or does he keep holding on to the branch and not fulfill his vows? And I think that, I was thinking about that in terms of this talk, that, you know, if I want to give this talk, I really have to let go of the branch a bit. And maybe I do have to fall to my demise. But anyways, so that confidence to try when you don't know, when you're uncertain, when you feel vulnerable, is so important. And that confidence in Buddhism is really what, confidence is really faith. It's faith that even though I don't at this moment, you know, really fully feel in my own being that I have this potential. This isn't really necessary along the path. This is part of what we all have to do. So the Dalai Lama, self-confidence is knowing that we have the capacity to do something and firmly deciding not to give up. With the realization of one's potential and self-confidence in our ability, one can build a better world. This is the self-confidence that enables you to move beyond your personal needs and focus on others. It comes from a feeling of abundance and security. It helps you to move from a sense of a guarded, separate self into a larger dimension. Compassion, or relating to others through suffering, is one of the most cherished and effective ways of extending ourselves into the world. The Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra was purported to be the Buddha's ultimate teaching, and it was supposed to come at the end of his life. Historically, there's some that's being questioned a bit, but it was meant to be a teaching of great importance. And in that, he proclaims we all have the ability to be fully enlightened. The enlightenment comes from the realization that we see in the innately part of the absolute unified oneness of existence. The setting for the Lotus Sutra was Vulture Peak. Here a vast multitude of beings, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, humans, demons, had assembled to honor the Buddha. All creation is awaiting his message. It makes explicit that all the Buddha's virtues can be attributed to an accumulation of good karma he acquired as an ordinary man. This is a really fundamental point. The Buddha never claimed to be a god. What he claimed to be was awake. And he also claimed that that was an innate ability that we all have. He had to work for it. The assertion that the Buddha was a mortal being is to make us all stop and think and to affirm that all living beings may, through practice of the way, become a Buddha themselves. This is the nexus of spiritual confidence, is that everybody has this innate potential. The great thought pervading the whole of the sutra is that the Buddha attained enlightenment, and so can we. Here's a quote. All life, in its nature, is of an identical substance of the Buddha. It is plain that the appearance in visible form has the capacity to become one with the Buddha. So on the one hand, we may all have vast hope. But on the other hand, we're made to stop and reflect. So it isn't enough to believe that the Buddha did this. We have to believe that we can do it also. This is the great determination part. The beginning of comprehension of this doctrine is a perception that at the heart of all things in this world is a world from the beginning of the universe that has been unchanging, in which everything is equal and at peace. But it's not enough to just believe or have confidence in our enlightened nature. We have to do some work to verify the understanding through our own experience. This is great determination. The path of the Bodhisattva. I'm so pleased to see one of my Jukai partners here, Karen. And I must say, Karen, your way-seeking mind talk was one of the things that gave me confidence to come forward and do this talk. It really was. The Bodhisattvas are those beings who are stirred with compassion for all living creatures and determined to rescue all people from their suffering. They renounce a sense of personal salvation and a vow to remain in this realm of samsara to work for the salvation of all. So that's what the Bodhisattva vows are, is that you put yourself on the line for eternity. And really, in the oneness of all, how could it be otherwise? How could there be individual nirvana? How could there be individual enlightenment? If it's all one, if all beings are one, then it's like saying that I can make the nail on my baby finger, I can heal it, but the rest of the body, well, the rest of the body has to do what it's going to do, you know. So in the Jukai ceremony here at Mountain Rain, myself and many of you have taken the vows. And the vows being, beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to enter them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. I said it wrong. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. I can't tell you the number of times I have said those vows to myself. So anyway, I think those, for me, the vows are almost like a lifeline. that really when I really feel lost, it's almost like I can hold on to them. They become a guiding force. And obviously, no one is ever going to realize these vows. It's not possible. That's not the point. They are a direction. They are an intention. This is how I am going to use my energy in this life and in every life to come. They are an affirmation of our highest intent, not a goal to be reached, but a direction to be followed with determination and confidence, now and forever. This is the last verse in Shantideva's 8th century writing on the way of the Bodhisattva. And now, as long as space endures, as long as there are beings to be found, may I continue likewise to remain, to drive away the sorrow of the world. What the Buddha mirrors for all of us is our innate capacity, and that with great determination, great faith and confidence, and great doubt, we can all realize our own true nature. And I'm going to finish with a little poem that I wrote for my sister, Marilyn. I wrote this when she was getting married 28 years ago, and I gave her a mirror, her Marilyn and her husband John, and I wrote them a little poem about the mirror. And it goes like this. The mirror of life, so bright and clear, lies deep within your heart. It was put there at the very start by the one who holds you dear. All the wisdom of the sages, truth passed down through the ages, is always there for you to behold when you look with a heart that's kind and bold. So when you look into another's eyes, remember that you see the vision of your own true self, which is beautiful to be.